Oladamare, Jenyami, Olorun, God, Jehovah, Allah, Amen-Ra, the many names for the original ancestor, ancestor who sees all and knows all, the creator of the heavens and the earth. We do not pour libation to you, but this morning we come pouring libation in memory and honor of our ancestors and asking them to intercede with you on our behalf. We know that our ancestors, being in the spirit world, are closer to you, and there's a greater opportunity that our request will be granted. We ask this morning that you grant the listeners the willingness to open their hearts and their minds to the information that's going to be shared, such that they will hear the truth and then be able to act on the truth. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. To our ancestors from Mother Africa, the ancestors who were the beginning of the human family that we now have, no matter what your ethnic or cultural background is, the beginning of human life as we know it was on the African continent. Every person on the face of the earth has as their original ancestor an African. We ask those Africans who were the first to conceive of a family, the first to plant a seed, the first to till the land, the first to domesticate animals, the first to navigate the mighty Nile River to Egypt, the first to build a skyscraper, the first to do surgery, the first to explore the wonders of the galaxy, and as importantly, the first to conceive of the belief in one God. We ask those ancestors to come and be with us today to bring their wisdom, their hard work, their ingenuity to all that we do. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. To our ancestors who were murdered, displaced, diminished during our great Holocaust, our great Miafa, we do not forget you. We remember your unwilling sacrifice as your bodies are lined the Sahara and the Atlantic Ocean. We remember you and we honor you and we ask that you come and be with us today. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. We ask our ancestors who gave us the great document, the Ma'at, to come be with us, bring your additional sense of honor and integrity as embodied by Ma'at to our discussions and our listings this morning. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. To those ancestors from the Caribbean islands, from Brazil, from the southern parts of these United States, who through your unpaid labor laid the groundwork for the civilizations that are enjoyed by billions of people around the world. To those ancestors, we say we do not forget you. We remember your sacrifice, your hard work, And we ask that you come and be with us today to inspire us to also do the work required to correct a world that has gone mad. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. And to those ancestors who are yet to be born, those ancestors for whom we do good work, those ancestors to whom we pledge to honorably do righteous work all the time for ourselves, for our families, for our communities, so we can be correct to be able to benefit from the largesse that the Creator has provided for all of us. Ancestors, we pledge ourselves to continue to do work such that when you return, this place will be a better earth. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. And finally, we'd like to ask you and our audience to think of one of your ancestors, someone who you would like to be with us this morning. On the count of three, ask that ancestor to come and be with us. One, two, three. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation, libation, libation. It is good.
Their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
Black in America means to me. My opinion is opinionated as intellectually weak, not by all, but by some. Being black in America makes my words automatically dumb. Being black in America means you're athletic, that there's no type of wisdom held in your genetics. Being black in America is hard to explain. Undermined is our struggle, and overlooked is our pain. Being black in America means to me that a man can kill an innocent black teen and a jury can set him free. Being black in America makes me wonder, how long will our people tear each other down as our youth continues to plunder? Being black in America holds division, when love and hip-hop and all these housewives can be broadcasted on national television, deteriorating our dignity, while there are everyday blacks working ruthlessly to build our humanity. Being black in America means to me that an unarmed black 18-year-old can be gunned down and shot 10 times by Ferguson police, while that same officer gets off on paid administrative leave, and those blacks rally to protest in those cold Missouri streets. Being black in America means to me that a group of New York City police officers don't know what it means when a black man says, "I can't breathe." So with these words, I speak to enforce that chant of no justice, no peace. If you're black in America, you are born into struggle. not always financially, but racially, not by all, but by some. Being black in America makes my words automatically dumb. Being black in America means you are known for your lies. You must fight for your rights, and you must fight for your life. Being black in America means artificial equality. Our law claims to protect us, yet demolishes our honesty. If you're black in America, your failure is their happiness. They become satisfied when you continue to kill off your statuses. Being black in America means you are stereotyped. You are a victim if your skin isn't naturally white, not by all, but by some. Being black in America makes my words automatically dumb. If you're black in America, to them, your money is illegal. You sell drugs and you steal to support all of your people. Being black in America means you are judged. You try your hardest to succeed, but sometimes it just isn't enough. If you're black in America, they hate when you're successful. They'd rather hold you down because otherwise it's more stressful. Being black in America means you are hated, not by all, but by some. Being black in America makes my words automatically dumb. But wait. Being black in America gives you a little more edge. You have the opportunity to prove them wrong with the weight of your success. If you're educated and black in America, you hold the key to your own. They become scared when you strive to achieve and accomplish all of your goals. We are blacks in America. We have the chance to make a change, to stand on top of our nation and earn respect for our names. Yes, all of us, no, not some. Being educated, hardworking, ambitious, determined blacks in America makes my words no longer dumb.
Fly free, so fly, and I own a piece of land somewhere off in a country. Oh, listen. Temperatures like 100 degrees, like I got chains. For the man, sure gone down this way. Whatever.
are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
This is Black Sister Talk on the Time for Awakening Network, part of the Black Reality Think Tank Network. This is Alonda Chambers, and I will be joined today with guest host Josh Jermaine and panel discussion will be led with Mr. Chris and Mr. Bill. And what we will be discussing on today is wrongful conviction. Before we get into this discussion, I just want to speak and say hello to everyone that is on the line and who has joined in. And so, hello, Dr. Rogers, hello, Jackie and Chris, hello, Gary, hello, Josh, Jermaine. And so I have unmuted everyone tonight. And so I just ask that you try to make sure it's nice and quiet where you are. And we will begin this discussion shortly. So, hey, Josh Jermaine, how are you today?
I'm doing pretty good, though. Hello, everyone. My name is Josh Jermaine. I'm a mental health advocate, though, working in mental health, though, in the Black communities. Always, you know, dedicated to, you know, being Black in America, learn about Black empowerment, and just learn how to educate myself so I can learn how to...
Say that again, Mr. Jermaine. You got cut out.
Basically, I'm an advocate of Black empowerment, though, and just trying my best to educate myself and learn how to educate others. And hopefully, though, you know, we can be more progressive.
Wonderful. I appreciate that. Thank you, my brother. And so, before we get into the nitty gritty of this discussion, we have to always pay respect to our ancestors. And so today's biography will be about John S. Rock. John S. Rock was a lawyer, a physician, a dentist, a teacher, a reformer, a lecturer, and a recruiter. On February 1st, 1865, the day after the House of Representatives passed the 13th Amendment, John Sweat Rock of Boston became the first African-American ever admitted to practice before the Supreme Court of the United States. Many toiled their entire lives to achieve such an honor. For Rock, who had already won acclaim as a teacher, dentist, and doctor, all before turning 30. It was merely the latest in a long list of accomplishments. Born in Salem, New Jersey on October 13, 1825, John Rock evinced remarkable talent and determination from an early age. While still a teenager and having only recently completed his own education, he was offered a job teaching in Salem's public schools. Over the next 4 years, he won the admiration of his colleagues, one of whom remarked that Rock was certainly the most orderly and the best conducted school I ever visited. Although myself a teacher for nearly 20 years. While he dedicated his days to educating others, Rock dedicated his nights to self-improvement, studying medicine in the hopes of gaining admission to medical school. When he was denied admission because of his race, however, he changed his focus and apprenticed under a local dentist. In 1849, after completing his training, he moved to Philadelphia, opening his own practice. Crafting award-winning false teeth, he proved to be as skilled at dentistry as he had been at teaching. Unfortunately, Rock found it difficult to earn a living because most of his patients were low-income African-Americans. What's more, he had not abandoned his dream of becoming a doctor, After another stint as an educator, he was accepted by the American Medical College in Philadelphia. Excelling as a student, he graduated in 1852, becoming one of the first African Americans to earn a medical degree. By this time, Locke was also starting to gain distinction for his work in the causes of temperature and abolition. Perhaps drawn by the city's reputation as the epicenter of anti-slavery themes, other more reform movements, he chose to set up his new medical and dental practice in Boston. Over the next several years, he rose to even greater heights, emerging as a leader in Boston's free black community and winning national recognition as a reformed lecturer. One of his lectures was so popular that he was invited to deliver it before an audience in the hall of the Massachusetts House of Representatives. In the late 1850s, Locke's health began to suffer, likely as a result of the onset of tuberculosis. Unable to continue lecturing or practicing medicine, he decided to travel to Paris to receive more advanced treatment. His application for a passport, however, was rejected. A passport was a certificate of citizenship, and the Southern-dominated federal government was unwilling to recognize African Americans as citizens, especially after the Dred Scott decision. Defying the will of the Buchanan administration, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts began granting its own passport to African Americans, allowing Locke to leave for Paris in the spring of 1858. Still, too unwell to resume his medical practice upon his return in early 1859, he returned to the lecture circuit. He was once again invited to speak at the Massachusetts State House, this time to deliver a lecture in which he used the character and writings of Madame de Stael, one of Napoleon Bonaparte's principal critics, to argue that women were the intellectual equal of men. One glowing newspaper review marveled, "Thus a thinking, educated German and French-speaking Negro converses and instructs a select American audience on female intelligence and literature of the past time in the hall of the House of Representatives of one of the first states in the Union." Not content with excelling as a teacher, dentist, physician, activist, and public intellectual, Locke embarked on his study of the law, successfully passing the Massachusetts bar in September 1861. During the Civil War, while continuing to practice law, Locke threw his energies into recruiting African Americans for the Union Army, helping to fill the ranks of the 54th and 55th Massachusetts Infantry Regiment. Determined to rise ever higher, Locke set his sights on a mission to the bar of the Supreme Court. When he achieved that distinction, the Boston Journal proud that the slave power, which achieved its constitutional death blow yesterday in Congress, risked this morning on account of the admission of a colored lawyer, John S. Rock of Boston, as a member of the bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. Unfortunately, Rock's health continued to decline. He died on December 3rd, 1866, having achieved more in 41 years than most accomplished in a lifetime. Man, John S. Rock sounds phenomenal. This was a strong brother, very ambitious. May you rest in power. That's phenomenal. So I'm opening back up the lines, you guys. So again, I want to just make a quick disclaimer. If you could keep it as silent as possible in your background. Thank everyone for listening today on Black History Talk. I'm your host, Yolanda Chandler. And this evening, we will be discussing wrongful conviction. More specifically, we will be discussing with two men their experiences with the justice system and how justice fails those who are at the wrong place at the wrong time. That's what Son would say. But if you're black, you may say, Being black is being at the wrong place at the wrong time. And so we will be having this discussion on today to have a gain a better understanding of how this experience affects your mental health when a wrongful conviction becomes a lifetime sentence. And so, Brother Josh, I want to just pass it over to you and see if you have anything you want to say before we get this discussion going, because otherwise I'm going to pass it over to Brother Chris and I just ask him to share his story with our viewers, and then we will follow up and have a discussion, you know, with them more.
Yeah, I'm looking
at our questions doing so.
Oh, for sure. Thank you. Yeah, I'm looking forward to the discussion, though. For me personally, I've never really been that involved with the court system, though. But, you know, thankfully in my community, they think I'm a blessing, you know, which I think is a problem because, you know, we're not criminals just because we've been in low socioeconomic status. You know, the stereotypes of what's going on in our society and how we are perceived on images, it looks like we sometimes get played against our own hand, you know, when it really counts. So I'm looking forward to the discussion, and I'm looking forward to hearing the story for sure.
Thank you, Brother Josh. Thank you. So, Brother Chris, I just want to welcome you to Black Sister Talk, and I just thank you for taking the time out to come share with us your story. And so, today I want you to really focus on answering a few questions for us, and it would be, who are you? Who were you before the incarceration? Who do you believe you were when you were arrested?
Well,
who did you know while incarcerated, and who are you now?
Okay, I remember you saying that. When I was incarcerated, when I first got incarcerated, well, I should say before, I just felt like, in my opinion, I was, even though I did have good guidance and all that, I feel in my own lane, which wasn't a good one. So I was kind of, I was a little lost. I was a little misinformed. Well, actually, a lot. You know, I was really unprepared for adulthood, even though I was able body and minded. I just was a lost soul then. When I got incarcerated, I was real angry. I was confused about a lot of things, a whole lot of mixed emotions. I was mad at the world for a minute. When I couldn't be mad at nobody myself, putting myself in that position. So during that time, you know, I was just trying to find myself. So I wasn't as lost as much after a few years or what have you, but I still had a lot of growing to do, a lot of learning to do, a lot of wisdom searching, you know, or at least just basically to help me cope with where I was and make better decisions and learn how to use it in a good way to my advantage or what have you. Towards the end of my bid, I did go through a couple more things, like the anxiety was setting in. You know, you don't know what you're going to come home to. Everything is almost new again. And, like, now that I'm out, you know, I still deal with, you know, little anxiety and things like that. So it's not as hard as it was. It's getting a little bit more manageable. But everything is so different now. So it's like, I kind of, it's a couple different brackets I find myself in. I find myself on a healthy youth a lot, or what have you, despite the outcome, whatever. I find myself on a healthy youth a lot. I find myself on a, you know, interact with people, just learn new stuff. I'm still catching up. I've been out for a year and a half, and I'm still catching up on music and movies, and we're not going to talk about technology. So now, basically, now I'm just still learning how to cope with the world and get myself together and you know, get my finances going, you know, learn how to be a better father, you know, amongst being a better family member, period, better friend. So I'm getting it together, but, like, now I feel like I'm a guy with a plan. I feel like I'm a guy with still that has unresolved issues, especially when it has to do with prison. But I am working on it. I'm a better person. And you still see a lot of things that have to do with prison reform or prison issues that's not being addressed. You see it from out here, especially when you were in it or have you. So that's kind of where I'm at now.
Thank you for sharing that, Chris. And so, I guess for me, and I just want to know how comfortable you are with talking about the wrongful conviction itself, you know. You don't have to go into great detail, but what happened to you?
As far as the when you say what happened, are you saying as far as, like, during my incarceration, or you mean, like, what the reason why?
How did you become incarcerated? Because we want to say, okay, first of all, that's a wrongful conviction. So when we're looking at this topic, we're looking at the fact that, hey, I have been arrested. Someone has said I've done something that I was free, that I didn't even do, right? Because that's the case with you. You know,
okay.
This is not something that I did. So, number one, going to jail is hard and an experience of itself. But being a man, going to jail for something you know you didn't do, you know, and I think you kind of, you talked about it just a little bit, but it's kind of read between the lines things or saying things like, I wish I knew more about how to handle a situation like that with the law. Basically, you know what I mean? Knowing how to deal with the law. I was not prepared for adulthood. You know, I'm looking at myself like a child. So, you know, how old were you when something like this happened? Because, you know, you would think
right.
that I'm a kid, but how do they see me? You may feel yourself as a kid, not ready for adulthood, but they looking at you like a super predator. They looking at you like, you did this. I don't give a damn what you tell me you did. You know, you would tell them, I didn't do this. And this interrogator would tell you you did, maybe even make you believe you did. Can you share with us that experience?
Okay. Well, I was 23 when I got locked up. I was going 24. And now, I don't want to get off too much in the detail because I'm going to be still going to be taking the legal what have you. But I was falsely convicted, no kind of evidence. I mean, they were determined to get a conviction. Now, they didn't really care about if I could have been busy guilty. Sorry about that. If I really was guilty, or could it be possible, am I innocent? Well, they didn't care. They didn't care. They seen red flags that, you know, the as far as my, what you want to call it, a victim, whatever, they seen holes in the story. They seen very, very, very directly visible inconsistencies and blatant lies, and, you know, they still just want to go along with it because they want that conviction. You know, it's all a hustle for them. I went to trial and everything. They weren't trying to hear nothing, and you know, they did try to give me a plea. Sometime I wish I would have took it, but then again, I'm glad I didn't, because it's somewhere down the line, if my story is going to be available to people. People going to be able to really see a whole lot about how bad the judicial system is through my story and a lot of other people. But again, it was no evidence. They just didn't care. They want to get it over as fast as possible. And, you know, like the DA will be having a little secret, not secret, but like having a little side meetings with the jury and everything. So the way I look at it is, from the arresting officer all the way down to the COs and the last person of authority I talked to before I was released, all a hustle for them. They don't care. Even in the prison, they condition the and train the COs not to care about a person, you know, like a, what do you want to call them, inmate, whatever, you know what they call it. That us educating ourselves, us trying to do better, us being better fathers, they didn't care about none of that. And they made programs available to you because it's a cash cow. It's a cash cow. You know, it's more stuff to put on the judicial portfolio, you know. They don't care about your families, your kids. They just didn't care. You know, they said they want to protect the public. They want to protect, you know, people. What about my family? What about what's going on with me? You know, even during trial, they set it up in this structure to where you can't talk unless you're being talked to, you know. So, and also the family of my alleged victim, you know, they even went to drop the charges, and, you know, they even went into hiding away from my PO and the DA and, you know, the police and all that. They even went into hiding. But they found them, and they told them, if y'all don't come to court, or if y'all do come to court and change y'all story, y'all going to jail, which is illegal. You can't tell nobody that. You can say you're breaking a crime, but you're not supposed to say you're going to go to jail, you know. You're not the judge. You can't say that, first of all. So it's basically intimidating the witness. But, yes, it's just a crazy thing. And I'm glad to speak to y'all, too, because it gives me a better outlook. It gives me a little bit more comfort. I still think about it today, and, you know, I find myself upset. Whatever. You know, wrongful conviction, it affects a person for a long time. A long, long time. You know, it even rolls over into your personal life in little aspects. You won't notice it until you notice it, or until it's brought to your attention. So, they also make it to where you have limited research time, you know, to fight your own case. They don't let us help each other. Study case law. You only have an hour. So just imagine you being a person that's freshly wrongfully convicted, and you don't know anything about the law. They don't let you help each other with that, with cases. The COs are not allowed to help you with cases, but they're allowed to go in your room and go through your paperwork, your motion to discovery, your trial transcripts. If it's to get you another case, they authorized to do that. So it's a whole big thing in about wrongful conviction, you know, how they blatantly going into it with the ulterior motive, you know what I'm saying, to further decorate that portfolio, you know. They don't think about how it's going to affect you. Could it potentially, you know, like push you off the edge? They just don't care. They don't care how you are when you come on, you know, how you coping with doing time for something you didn't do. You know, it becomes a part where sometimes, even though I have changed a whole lot, it still makes me sometimes want to go back to my old ways. Like, well, you know, if I was convicted of wrongfully convicted of something, you know, they didn't care at all, and I have got no type of vindication, no relief, no compensation for what I've been through. So sometimes it makes you want to just, like, forget everything. You know, I'm going to be like everybody else then. It makes you bitter. Sometimes it makes you hate people that work in the judicial system. Sometimes it just makes you take your anger out on people who don't deserve it. So I just want to touch bases on that, because it's more of a serious thing that people realize, and it's an ongoing thing. And if something happens, it's going to keep happening. It's going to keep happening. It's going to keep happening.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. So, first of all, I just want to thank you again for coming on Black Sister Talk to share your story, because this is a place where you can breathe, and I want you to feel empowered to get these things off of your chest, because this is a part of the healing. You know, this is a part of reflecting, looking at some of the things that have happened to you, what led you to be in a position like that, and, you know, kind of how do you move on? You know, is there a way to move on from this?
Right.
I know it's affecting your mental health and relationships, and, you know, we got to look at all domains of life. We got to look at
right.
mind, body, spirituality, how I get a job. How do I, you know, now take care of my family? You know, how long have you been incarcerated? What things you experienced while being, all these different factors matter when you get out, because this is stuff that go on in your mind. Whenever you ain't doing nothing, when the mind is idle, it goes back to the trauma, because we're trying to protect ourselves from something, you know. And so I just wonder for you what that experience is like for you now. You know, how are you picking up the pieces?
Right. It does affect the relationship well.
Yeah, probably,
like,
with your mother, you know.
Like being in prison, you got to constantly watch people, because people like to pocket watch, bag watch, you know. Where I was just at, they don't really go in your room and stuff like that. There's too many cameras, and the way the place set up, you know, that you're going to get caught. Somebody's going to tell on you. And then it's like with the hygiene thing, you know, a lot of people like myself kind of turn into a germaphobe of some sort. And, you know, a lot of times when you were in prison, you want your stuff the way it is. You want your stuff in a certain way. You know what I'm saying? So I find myself being a little territorial about how people treat my stuff. And then people look at me like, man, are you serious? It ain't nothing but it's just a, you know, so, and they don't really understand it. So, you know, people tend to be like, oh, you institutionalized. And it's about, I do have a few sprinkles of it. I do. I won't lie. It ain't about that, though. It's like, once you sit down for so long, you have a chance to look at life from an aspect that nobody other than somebody who's been incarcerated before can understand. So you like order now. You like a little bit of order. You like structure. And people tend to look at you like you're too serious, or like you're too aggressive, or, you know, like being in prison really affects you in so many areas, and sometimes you just don't notice. You know, and like, you catch yourself getting irritated fast. A lot of times you don't want to be around groups of people. Sometimes I'll be in a restaurant, and I can feel people walking behind me, or I can feel people looking at me. It's crazy. It's really crazy. But it affects you in so many areas in your life, sometimes even with your kids. So, you know, I'm glad to be able to talk, too, because people... I don't think prison issues get enough spotlight at all, you know. And then, not to mention, when you do get incarcerated, a lot of times they send you to these little small counties, these small cities, where there's not a lot of black people. They don't know how to handle black people. They don't know how to deal with black people, talk to black people, or how to act around us. So a lot of times people dislike or go against what they don't understand. So you already took them away from your family, amongst these other things that you're going through from, you know, from being outside, being taken away from your freedom or what have you. And it's, I mean, so much things. I don't want to do too much talking on, you know, hog the spotlight. But you have CEOs that don't like you, don't like your time. And then, you know, they go and do all the research they can on you. They form opinions. They put you in a box, whatever. And I ain't talking about the hoe. I mean like a box to where they got you labeled. They don't care what kind of good attributes you got, you know. They just treat you a certain way. They come to work with it. They got a chip on their shoulder. There's so many things that guys that were incarcerated, you have to deal with. And it's so unfair because a lot of other people don't understand. When they don't understand, they lose the zest to help you, you know.
Exactly. And you know what, Chris, I'm glad you brought that up because as a mental health therapist, I speak with a lot of different clients who talk about this label and how, you know, everybody knows what you're in there for. They can see it on your card, especially the CEOs and upper management, right? And so, like you said, they will treat a person a certain kind of way because of what they're in there for, not thinking for one second this person may not have done this. Everybody in jail is treated like a criminal because that's why they're in prison, right? Everybody who goes to prison is a criminal. But that's not true if you have been wrongfully convicted. It's almost double traumatizing. Jail itself is traumatizing, but to be there and not need to be there or supposed to be there, that is a whole nother feat to accomplish. You know what I mean? And I could just imagine CO seeing your card and maybe doing something or saying something to you offhanded. And so I'm wondering, how does those verbal assaults still present for you today? You know, do you have flashbacks from these events?
Yes, ma'am. I absolutely do, because it's like, if someone was to find out that I was incarcerated and they make a certain comment, initially, I'd be ready to slap the hell out of them. Excuse my language. I'm ready to, you know, lash out. But, you know, I'm older. I'm 35 years old. I said, you know what? I got to think for myself and this person. I got too much to lose. Why would I let this person who is very ignorant to what I'm going on, to what I'm going through, knock me off my square? So it's like sometimes you have to check people in the most intelligent and kind way you can, which is sometimes the worst kind. But, you know, you got to kind of educate people as well. Like, you know, and then a lot of times after they hear me talk and they be able to see where I'm coming from, it's like a whole new thing. And when it kind of gets to that point, I don't want to be friendly anymore. I keep the respect level and all of that, but I don't want to be friends anymore. I don't want to, you know, have any future encounters with you if I don't have to. Because, like, if you showed me that small dose of judgmentalness, you know, it's still some more in there. And I already got to go deal with the rest of the world, so why I want to keep dealing with that with you? And, you know, people make their comments, they make their judgments. People look at you funny from across the room. All types of stuff. And then you have people that just get so fascinated by it. They got a million questions. But and you're always going to be labeled. That's why a lot of guys that you see in prison, they are very laid back. They had a chance to sit back and watch life instead of being in it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I've dealt with COs that said things to me that had I not had a friend by, I would have cast a coffin extra charges. You know, you got COs that are just heartless. You have the COs that wait till your family come up here, wait till your lady come up and see you. And why are you wasting your time on somebody in jail? And It's like in the end, they look at us like we animals, and then it's even worse that you have other young, talented, smart African Americans that do things that make people of other ethnicities or other walks of life look at us like we animals, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like we're fighting our own people as well as the people who fighting us.
Exactly.
It's a very big battle. It's a very big battle, and it's something that's not going to go away in the first 5 or 10 years unless you just want a few to get that lucky.
Exactly.
I guess I got two things I want to say real quick, because I know we almost at the top of the hour, and I'm gonna toss it over here to you, Josh. But what is a word of advice you would want to share with young men who are coming up and may find themselves in a situation like the one you are in?
As far as about to catch a case or already caught a case?
Not catching a case. One that has not caught a case. Has not caught a case yet.
I tell my nephews this a lot. I always tell them, a smart man learns from his mistakes, but a wise man learns from others. I tell them that if you think what you're going through right now is dire enough for you to go break the law and catch a case, just imagine the psychological warfare you're going to go through when you go to prison. A lot of times you're going to come home with anxiety. You're going to come home with depression. It's a psychological warfare. I'll tell them. It's the type of situation to where if you are a smart person, period, you would rather take a week-long butt-whipping, a beating or whipping, whatever you want to call it, than to spend, you know, a bid in prison where it's conditioned for people to have conflict. It's conditioned for people to judge you. It's conditioned to give you residual heartache and side effects, sometimes lifelong side effects until you get help. I would tell them it's something better. Keep your good credit. Keep your clear name. You know, have you a plan. Have you a plan. Some of the guys, they still want to kick it with the cool guys, the D-boys and all that. Actually, you can still kick it with them, but handle your business and stay out of prison. You know what I'm saying? You don't have to do what they're doing to look cool, to be cool, to fit in. You just got to be you. So that's what I really tell the younger guys. And sometimes I have to, you know, kind of poke them in the heart a little bit. Sometimes you have to tell them, like, you got that nice woman right there. And you already know she got a hold. You already know a lot of times they got a hold on the person. They love their woman a lot, which is, I appreciate it. But just imagine what you're going to put her through when you leave. Just imagine if what you put her through when you leave is not strong enough to keep y'all together. There's so much stuff you lose from being in prison. So, yeah.
Exactly. Mr. Chris, you are so right. You're so right. Brother Josh Jermaine, you want to chime in?
Oh, of course, though. First of all, I salute you, brother, for you to be able to be on air and really talk about this issue, and I cannot agree with you more. This is a topic that needs to be talked about. Mass incarceration has been an issue, and unfortunately, though, it's the black people that's going through the pipeline, you know, and that's just the unfortunate truth. I had a lot of questions, though, but I can size it on down, you know, because I think the one thing you said best is the animal part, that we don't look at the stereotypes. You know, we look at these stereotypes when we are in the community, and we look at it and we joke about it. You know what I'm saying? We watch media, we watch TV shows and stuff like that, and we think it's entertainment. But it seemed like to me when we all of a sudden got to get convicted for something, though, I mean, we consider it for being bad no matter if we did bad things or not. You know what I'm saying? So I think that stereotypes play a big part. So my question would be is, how important do you think our overall image that's being perceived by media, entertainment, that plays a part in racial bias during convictions, wrongful or not?
Well,
Hello? Hello?
Well, hello.
Yeah, I heard what you said, Josh. What I would say to that is, I think that the music is highly influenced by those things. And it's a cycle that's integrated and not one that exists separate. The music, the media, all of these things are being reinforced. You know, I guarantee you the one that's making the rap song ain't gonna be out there really on the street corner selling drugs. They're gonna send their kids to get the best education they can get while yours is barely learning how to read and write. And so that's not done by mistake. You know, that's done right. on purpose. That's a message that they are trying to program and drill in us, that we are these super predators and that we are nothing. Mm-hmm. And so that's going to continue to perpetuate in society on a local level. Like the gentleman said, they put these prisons in places where people who don't even like black people, let alone been exposed to black people, can identify with black people. So we have a whole cultural shift where folks making laws that control those prisons because they're in those municipalities then. So yeah, it's set up like that on purpose. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't want these people seeing, they don't want the prison in the city where the crime was committed because their family can get to them. They don't want you to see your family. They don't want to make that convenient for you. You know, so it's all to create a demise in some shape, form, or fashion. And
it's really hard to try. And I also, too, think that it's a lot to do with not understanding the law. You know, I think I hear that a lot is that, you know, we grow up and be like, oh, we don't understand the law until, you know, we finna do some time or we get caught up with the law. And then by the time we get caught up, I mean, I know it's a lot going on with that plea deal situation going on. It's like, and just imagine that so much fear and anxiety is being thrown at you, saying that you finna do a year, you know, even a week, a month, you know what I mean? And people are throwing you these kind of deals, and you don't even know what to say. You got public attorneys coming at you that's not really getting your best interest at heart. You know, it's just, it's set up for us to fail, obviously, you know, and it's unfortunate that a lot of times, though, when these black folks do get convicted, they're doing more times than white people would do, you know. So it's just like, you know, the trauma just don't stop, you know.
Yeah, but you know what? It could be all summed up to this, too, because you're right, and this is this. You gotta know the rules to the game and know how to play. Because those who are in charge control the rules. And if you don't know how to play it, you're gonna fall victim to the system. And that's really what it is. Brother Chris?
Yes,
Brother
ma'am.
Chris, I just gotta say I appreciate you coming on Black Sister Talk today and sharing your story. And I hope you stick around if you're able to continue to engage in this discussion because, what you're saying is so true, you know, and I think that it's repetitive in our community, and we need to be able to reach out and teach those little ones coming up. So I like that you're interested in working with the youth.
Me too.
And I hope that you are able to do something with that because there needs to be some prevention and there needs to be some education about the law, like Brother Joshua Lane just said. These young men need to learn about the law. We doing stuff every day, but we ain't paying attention to the rules in the book. We just operating on right or wrong, what we think is right and wrong, what we learn. You know.
Right.
Socialization. Mm-hmm. You see authority, you think you gotta tell them this, and this, when sometimes authority like, I don't give a damn, it's gonna be this or that anyway, because I am who I am. That's what it is. But listen, you guys, we're at the top of the hour. We're going to go on break real quick, and we're going to come right back. When we come back, we'll continue this discussion.
Okay. We all agree tonight, all of the speakers have agreed, that America has a very serious problem. Not only does America have a very serious problem, but our people have a very serious problem. America's problem is us. We're her problem. The only reason she has a problem is she doesn't want us here. And every time you look at yourself, be you black, brown, red, or yellow, a so-called Negro, you represent a person who poses such a serious problem for America because you're not wanted.
Once you face this as a fact, then you can start plotting a course that will make you appear intelligent instead of unintelligent. What you and I need to do is learn to forget our differences. When we come together, we don't come together as Baptists or Methodists. You don't catch hell because you're a Baptist, and you don't catch hell because you're a Methodist. You don't catch hell because you're a Methodist or a Baptist. You don't catch hell because you're a Democrat or a Republican. You don't catch hell because you're a Mason or an Elk. And you sure don't catch hell because you're an American, because if you was an American, you wouldn't catch no hell. You catch hell because you're a black man. You catch hell, all of us catch hell for the same reason. So we are all black people, so-called Negroes, second-class citizens, ex-slaves. You are nothing but an ex-slave. You don't like to be told that. But what else are you? You are ex-slave. You didn't come here on the Mayflower. You came here in a slave ship. In chains, like a horse or a cow or a chicken. And you were brought here by the people who came here.
Cowards, then it's gonna be quick. I owe your man, they've been to jail before. I know the mother catch you run with, get done with, come quick. You gonna poke the dog with some bump. They go to gun click. Now I'm 1-1, all over some dump. Ain't that some? It's remind me of a strip club. Cause every time you come around, it's like, what? I just gotta get my dicks up. And I don't know who the fuck you think you talking to, but I'm not him, I explain. So watch what you do, or you gon' find yourself very next to someone else. And we all thought you loved yourself, but that couldn't have been the issue. Or maybe they just singing that now cause they miss you. Try to diss you. That's why you laying on your back, looking at the roof of the church. Preacher telling the truth and it hurts.
Y'all gon' make me lose my mind. Up in here, up in here. Y'all gon' make me go all out. Up in here, up in here. Y'all gon' make me act a fool. Up in here, up in here. Y'all gon' make me lose my cool. Up in here, up in here.
Off the chain, I leave ass off of the brain. Still want the fame, off the name. First of all, you ain't rap long enough to be fucking with me and you. Strong enough. So whatever it is you puffing on, that got you thinking that you Superman. I got the kryptonite and I smack you with my dick in the mic. That's character, it's not even good actors. What's gonna be the outcome? It's out of all the factors. You whack, you twisted, your girls are
whoa.
You broke, the kid ain't yours, and everybody knows. Your own man say you stupid, you be like, so? I love my baby mother, I never let her go. I'm tired of weak, whining over foot that don't belong to them. What's wrong with them? Get up for real, like my man's in them. Who get it all from the strip of the hands with them?
Man, y'all gon' make me lose my mind. Up in here, up in here. Y'all gon' make me go all out. Up in here, up in here. Y'all gon' make me act a fool. Up in here, up in here. Y'all gon' make me lose my cool. Up in here, up in here.
I bring down rings, the heaviest curse to head. No more talk. Put him in the dirt instead. You keep walking, that you're trying to end up red. Cause if I end up dead, I end up dead. Cause you're just soft type.
What?
Fake up dog type. Push like a soft wipe. Dog is a dog, blood thicker than water. We done been through the mud and we quicker to slaughter. The bigger the order, the more guns we want out. When up in there, everybody come out. When the body burn out, send in the sun out. I'ma keep the gun out. Running his mouth, I'ma blow his gun out. Listen, yo, he's about to be missing. You know who gon' find you? Some old man fishing. Grandma wishing your soul at rest, but it's hard to digest the size of the hole in your chest.
Y'all gon' make me lose my mind. Up in here, up in here. Y'all gon' make me go all out. Up in here, up in here.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media. Part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Hello, everyone. I want to just thank you all for listening to Black Sister Talk. on the Time for Awakening Media Network. Before we get back to our discussion of wrongful conviction, I want to just tell you about some other shows that are on our network. On Mondays from 11 to 1, we have African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie. We also have this from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, host Brother Jihad Ahmad. And from 8 to 9 that day, we have Black Therapy Central. Black Therapy Central hosts are Dr. Mariah Campbell and Sister Mataki Campbell. Later on that evening, from 9 to 10, we have Conversations Reparations, first and third Monday. Then on Tuesday night, from 8 to 10 Eastern Time, note all of these times are Eastern, from 8 to 10 Eastern Time on Tuesday, we have Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers. Thursday evening, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, we have After 7, host Shani B. On Friday, we have Time for Awakening from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And on Saturdays, you'll hear back with us from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, listening to Black Sister Talk with myself and our guest panelists or guest hosts. And then on that later on that evening, from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, we have the Elders of Sankofa, host Alfonso Walker. And then finishing up on Sunday, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, we have Time for an Awakening. And later on this month, we should start Black Farmers Program. And so that is our lineup for our shows. We're growing. It's nice. It's wonderful. I like that we have all these wonderful shows. And I think it'll be something good for our viewers to do. Start checking it out and seeing what we have available. Each and every discussion is always one that you can cut on and just listen to. And it's a wonderful network to be a part of. And so we are going to get back into it. Get right back into the discussion of wrongful conviction. I'm going to turn it over to Chris and just talk with him for a minute and see if he has anything he wants to share with us, because I know his time is limited. So, Brother Chris, thank you. Thank you for sitting in and listening to the break. And so I just wanted to touch bases with you and see if you had anything else you wanted to share with us before I turn over to Brother Gary and have him share his story with us as well.
Chris? Are you guys still there?
Yes. Do you have anything else you'd like to share with us, Chris?
I do. I do have a lot. I'm just telling my mom I actually like it, and every time y'all do it, I participate. I do have a few other things I want to do, but I got so much I want to say. There's not enough time.
I can appreciate that, and so I think we might have earned us a new viewer, a new listener here on the show and participant. And so what I would say to you, Chris, is you can call every Saturday from 3 o'clock to 5 p.m., and definitely know that Black Sister Talk, where you can breathe, is a place you can breathe. This is a community healing platform that I use, because I know a lot of times for Black people, we don't think we need therapy. We don't think we need to talk. And, and so this is my sneaky little way. I'll tell y'all the truth. I ain't gonna never lie to my viewers. This is my sneaky little way of getting you to become comfortable with the idea and exposing yourself to being able to vent. To be able to vent and not be judged and know that it's
right.
Okay. You're not crazy. These things are real. These things are fucked up. These things haunt you for the rest of your life. And so I know that as a mental health therapist, and that's why I do what I do. I want you to be comfortable in your own skin, knowing that your story is a real one. It deserves to be heard. You should be able to share it.
Right.
And so I thank you. I thank you for coming on Black Sister Talk and continue. I appreciate your participation. And like I said, anytime you want to come on here and talk, your mom got my number, hit me up, and we'll make it happen, okay?
Okay. I got somebody I want to kind of introduce you to, if you don't mind.
Oh, what's going on?
You probably heard about him before. His name is Dante Cottingham.
Mm-hmm.
You know who he is?
Hello, Dante.
That's my boy.
I hear him.
No, he's not here. I'm sorry. He's not here right now. He's not with me now, of course. But I was just saying, like, he called me and stuff like that, and I don't know if you ever linked with him, you know, like a
no,
call.
No, I haven't.
I can make it happen.
But you know what? You know what? I think what we could do is a follow-up show and have a healing session where we talk with fathers and sons that have been incarcerated and see how that relationship has been and how you can build and grow on that. So I'd like to hear from the both of you, actually. I want to hear some more of that. Miss Chuck is going to be all up in the business. I'm sorry. Let's talk in the sidebar about it. And I'm going to reach over to Gary. I think you may be able to identify with some of the things that Brother Gary is about to share. And I'd like to, if we have time for you all, to be able to reflect and talk amongst selves, okay? So I'm going to let Gary talk. Thank you so much, Chris, for sharing your story. And I hope that you have continued success in your future endeavors. Hello, Gary. How are you?
Hello, Ms. LaWanda. I'm well. Thanks for asking. How are you?
Wonderful. I'm doing well myself. And so I really just want to hear the first part of the show. And so I'm going to give you the space to kind of share your story. So you can tell us a little bit of what happened with you, the time and place, you know, let us know how old you were, what year it was, you know, just give us a little backstory. You're hearing this story through your eyes and ears, and so go for it.
All right, my name is Gary Chambers, and I was convicted of, wrongfully convicted of an armed robbery in the city of Chicago County, Cook County. And the alleged victim, she basically never identified me as having a party to any of that. But however, being in the area, the police were able to scoop us up and pin this crime on us because we're basically witnesses to the crime with no participation. So just being there basically was enough for them, you know, for a modern-day Karen to say that she believed that we might have been with the actual robber but actually never touched her. These type of cases are common in Cook County. Cook County at that time, 1992, being labeled a false confession capital. So this is nothing new to have a felony just thrown on you. So when we talk about from school to prison pipeline, that's exactly what it is. So we already struggling on a day-to-day life. And then when you get out of high school and end up in college, imagine something like this would happen to you. Now, I'm going on 50. I'm 48 right now. This happened when I was 19. Now, I've never had a problem with the law. In fact, my dream was to be a Chicago policeman, killing some of these neighborhoods out here, stopping these killings that are going on out here. But often we don't get the chance to see people for who they are, because we have a preconceived idea of who we think they are. So, I come up from a great family that raised me to be a great person and not victimize people. But here I stand as a victim. And I totally understand the part in which I play. I could never figure out why something like this would happen to me. I had no understanding of it. But it is for this day and this time to give it to the people of Cook County on how it works for not just you, how it works for all of us. Now we have a state's attorney, Kim Fox, who says that she's for us. and is going to be able to give, correct some of these wrongful convictions. Here I stand. Yes, Ms. Wanda, I think you had a question.
No, I'm being your hype man. I'm saying, come on, Kim, tell it. Tell it, because it's time to breathe. Get it off your chest, because you right here, I stand, waiting, knocking, almost kicking down the door. I'm here. Look at this case. You know,
So initially, what it is, okay, the only reason something like this would happen is because you're poor. You cannot afford to approach the system, and by giving you a public defender, because you are poor and you can't afford an outside attorney, the Constitution of the United States of America has been null and void. They can do anything they want to do to you. You can't afford to play the game. You have nothing on the table. So it's all theirs. You know, if the prosecutor recommends that you be locked up and labeled this super predator, which you were named under the Clinton administration, that's what's going to happen. You can't afford it. You are in a caste system under the new Jim Crow. And this is how the game is played. And once you realize this is how the game is played, you're going to have to step your game up to be able to not just survive in it, but thrive in it. Now, here's the situation. You have an opportunity to teach these people that are in prison to be good people once they re-enter society. But there are no programs in prison. You know, you're starting from square one. But they have an opportunity to give somebody a second chance when they're coming out those doors. So I can only say, why would someone decide to put their guns down out there in the streets of Chicago on the west side and south side if you don't have a program that you got for them when they were locked away? So in the event that you start something like that, a person can actually see a reason to put their gun down. You have people out in those streets that are eating with their guns. It's a two. It's how they feed their families. And some of them out there got bodies on. But in order to stop that type of behavior, you have to give them something to replace it that's going to allow them to not just survive, but thrive in this modern-day caste system, which we are breaking down. Know your part in it. I'm a first-time convicted felon for a crime that I did not commit. On the behalf of the people of Chicago and Cook County, I come through CPS grammar school from kindergarten to high school. Mm-hmm. I did enter college, one of the first in my family. But once I got there on that first semester, this happened. So we talking about from school to prison pipeline, born in Cook County Hospital, born and bred Chicago. Yes, I've traveled all across the United States, but Chicago is still home.
Oh.
We are in a battle. Free people. 2020. 400 mm-hmm. years of slavery is up. Yes, ma'am.
Gary, let me ask you this. On September 9th, what did Attorney Stephen Richards ask for on your behalf? Because I know that, you know, you just really said a lot in a short amount of time, but almost being 50 and having this follow you for such a great deal of time, you know, how has that changed your life?
Well, I tell you like this, Mr. Wanda, since I've never been one to participate in a criminal aspect of life, it's just something that was shunned upon me. And I gladly take it because I am a thriver. I'm a born thriver. I've been thriving in this cash-based system since I exited prison in 1994. Mm-hmm. And I started working 2 days after being released. I realized a college experience could no longer benefit me with this conviction up on my back. Now, with this conviction up on my back, life was not over. It was just a chapter in the book. It's not my end story. So we have to start thinking about, rather than things that I can't do, I can no longer apply for the Chicago Police Department and be an officer out here detaining law and order. That's a dream in which I will not have. So then we start thinking about the things that we can do in life. Who are you? Have you not heard these type of stories before? This is not common for someone like me to get out of prison and thrive, not survive. I'm not telling you no pity stories. You get off your butt and make it work. This is America. But here we have, yes, I was around criminals, killers, murderers, drug dealers, but I did not fit into that. So how are you going to rehabilitate me, put me in the cage with the super predators that you claim? So the counseling and the trauma is what you're hearing now, or the lack of counseling, because I'm a thriver. Okay, we're going to make this system work. We're going to get out here and move it. We're going to change the game. We're not going to have a pity party. We're going to teach others to have this type of mental attitude when you get out of prison. Let's go out here and make it happen.
I like that.
Thank you. So my thing is, if you want peace on these streets out here, who's best to give it to you than someone who's already been there?
Mm-hmm.
We have a program that will be starting once I'm vacated. But let me go back to the question you asked me. You asked me what's going to happen on September the 9th. On September the 9th, my attorney, Stephen L. Richardson's, will be heading into court asking the Cook County State's Attorney Office to vacate this conviction. Newfound information has been discovered, and Mr. Richardson will be presenting it at that time. The Cook County State's Attorney Office has been advised upon a wrongful conviction petition, as well as a request to vacate. If and when and if that happens, I will have a clean record. I will be able to return to my place of employment, to where I've been gainfully employed for more than 17 years with the City of Chicago with Transit. So at that time, we will be asking permission to return to work and permission to run the second chance program. That's where other people like myself could be employed with the Chicago Transit Authority under second chance program, to give a helping hand to those brothers and sisters out there that are struggling.
Hello. Pay it forward initiative. Mm-hmm. I like that.
In the event,
that's
thank you. In the event that this doesn't come forward, we have a plan saw A to Z. And that's what we need to be teaching our brothers and sisters out there who's incarcerated. If plan A don't work, let's go to B and let's head to Z all the way through it.
Okay.
So if that doesn't work, we will be heading to the leader of every gang in Chicago for a peace treaty to where we can create structure out here on these streets.
Mm-hmm.
Every gang.
Okay. You see where I got this mind from, okay?
Listen, in the city of Chicago.
Gary, you know what? I love that. I love it, in each and every one of them, you know my number. And so, to the other people on the line, I just want to give them an opportunity to ask questions and speak with you as well. And so, Josh Jermaine, do you have anything you'd like to ask Gary?
Yeah, I have a question, though, because I don't know much about the law like I need to know, and this show let me know I need to be more informed about it. But it looked like to me like it's like a pressure that if this court don't get this conviction set, then it's like it's an embarrassment. But who is an embarrassment by? Is it by the city? Is it by the state? Like, what is this pressure that kind of forces convictions to go through, you know, outside of them saying that the city is solving crimes, you know?
Well, I'm going to tell you like this, okay? A lot of times, being young, we make bad decisions, okay? And that bad decision doesn't necessarily avert to a major crime, but however, it gives the system the stick to whoop your own behind. So I cannot say that I didn't break any laws. But however, I didn't break the law that you are pending on me. Okay, but let's give you this. Okay, I'm on the north side of Chicago. Okay, I've never been to the north side of Chicago. Okay, everyone in my family are gun toters legally. Okay, I am planning on being on the police department, so I tote a gun traveling from someplace I'm familiar with home to the north side. Okay? We're out after midnight. Okay? So what ends up happening is we witnessed a crime. Okay? When the police picked my schoolmate up with me, we were together. I was armed. Although I had not participated in a crime, okay, or that crime, okay, and you verified it with the victim, okay, but having that weapon, okay, allows them to put you with that crime. And I totally understand it. But now it is time to correct it.
Mm-hmm.
My story is no different than the victim's story. My story is no different than the police story. Okay? My story is I was poor and I did not have any dollars in the game.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay? So, now that we know what it is, let's fix it.
Exactly.
I belong to no gang. I've never been in close proximity to a gang. But believe me, I know them, and they know me. I've always been aboard Paul. I have no problem working and teaching others how to work and thrive in this caste system because we've been thriving.
And so what you need to know is wrongful convictions happen for several reasons, and they don't happen in no any one order. But it's evident here to say that this is a product of bad police work, prosecutorial misconduct, false confession, faulty eyewitness identification. You know, sometimes you got bad lawyering, sleeping judges, and junk science. I mean, we can almost check everything off the box here when looking at these issues. And I hope that on September 9th, that stamp of approval is given, because it is evident to say here.
Okay, focus on that.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, though. It's definitely unfortunate that you could do all the right things you want to do, though, and when it's all said and done with, you can still be convicted. You know, that's the... I mean, and think about the mental health part, though. Think about how much traumatizing that is, you know, to know that you're not always going to be safe, you know, even if you do the right thing, you know. So it's like not only do it send a stigma to the black community, but I think it plays a way in how we reinforce certain behaviors and our community, and we normalizing it too, you know, because we want to be comfortable and we just want to figure out ways to be who we are, but it seems like we got this system, this judicial system that's corrupted, you know.
Well, a lot of times when we know the system is corrupted, you know, we should be able to even thrive better in it, and it should keep us on our toes. But there are times when we make that one slip, okay, and that one slip to get you to the point where you can't recover. Sometimes, you know, you can, but in most cases, you know, when they of this severity, it's very difficult to recover. But if you've never been in that criminal aspect or minefield, you can basically get back on track, you know, after this process ends. But just keep in mind that the conviction is eternal until we address it. And we have to get to the point to where coming out of our silence and, you know, no longer, you know, keeping this bound in the closet, we can speak on it, and we can ask for some type of immediacy to where if you're out there saying that we're going to restore justice in America and give people their just due, when you know that the laws are not meant for us. So a lot of times you're saying, you know, how could they do this? You know, you have to have a vast understanding that the Constitution is not for you. That's why they can do lock you up without basic evidence. You know, even, you know, in the case of Breon Taylor, you got a killer, okay? But if they can lock you up, they can lock them up, okay? So it's no difference. But the Constitution don't apply to you. That's why. And it applies to them. They get the Constitution. Those officers that shot Breon Taylor get the Constitution. And you don't. I don't. All they have to do is believe it. It doesn't have to be true. If they believe it is so, it's so.
And so it is what it is. And then they'll make you think it's so. You know, sometimes they do it so much, you start thinking it's so. And it's like, no, I'm not agreeing to this. And when you don't agree to it, they punish you more.
But here's the kicker too, okay? You get into a situation where you don't have any money in the game to a paid attorney who spent his life going through school. You got nothing in the game in their system. So, your public defender will tell you something like mine told me, that I spoke with the state's attorney, and she do understand that you have no criminal record. But, however, if you decide to go with a jury rather than a bench trial, the case holds 6-30 on a Class X and 1-4 on a Class 4 for unlawful restraint. If you go with a jury and you are guilty, the state at that time could ask for more time than the minimum sentence of 6, and you can get anywhere from that 6-30. Further convincing me to take a bench trial when I should have taken a jury, thinking that the system would be fair and that I had a right to the jury and not be forced to take a bench trial and get 6 years, or take a jury and get anything from 6-30. I've never been in the system before, but man, this seemed like playing poker. I was
man, lucky. Don't it? That sounds perfect.
So, again, you have no money to go with a paid attorney. The public defender is paid by the state. Talking to the state, talking to the judge, who's more than likely an ex-prosecutor formerly working for the state. It's you against all of them. So, I would hate to have to go to the streets and lose my status and continue in this caste system and be struggled to survive like we see our brothers and sisters do. I came out because our county officials and state officials, even the federal officials, are calling for these type of cases to be corrected. I want to work. I am a worker. I show up every day and I show out. I teach my family the exact same way. If you don't work, you don't eat. And I like good things and I eat well. I refuse to be in this prison chat system.
I believe that. Hey, Lucille?
Yes.
Come on, Lucille. I want to know if you want to ask a question?
Well, you know, the comment I'm making is that time for a change. And our government, the 13th Amendment, really needs to be relooked at. And the community that our boys, that I worked at Ethan Allen, and in 2004, 2011, there was every young man in there, everyone, just simple crimes. Boys, I hate to say it like this, boys will be boys. There are some mistakes, things that happen to kids, and it's a mistake. It shouldn't be prison time. It should be dealt with in a different way. But because of that, in the 70s, what the government did, they wrote in a lot of garbage into that constitutional piece about the imprisonment and servitude and slavery and all this stuff. It's just, it's a big mess. But no one never looks at it and face it, because I know he's telling the truth, because I have a son. They told me that if he pleads, if he takes the plea or whatever it was, he will be out in blank time. But if he goes to court, he will be serving 30 to 60 years. That did not make sense to me. And he got $25,000, but he did not end up getting that amount of time. So it don't matter about sometimes all the money you got. It's the system that already got trump card on everything, and they're going to take your money. They either those lawyers going to make their money one way or the other. So I'm one of these kind of people. There's a movie called 13, and it's on Netflix. And I would like to see this revisit again and watch that movie, because it gives you the whole scenario, the whole layout of the what the Constitution did, the presidents, and how they just brought it to them. This is it. I mean, just, there's no way, if your skin is dark, that you're going to come out of here free. And I wish I agree. Because a lot of this stuff is only constitutional because they wrote it in there. But how did they get it in there without us knowing about it? I, some of the things I heard in that movie, and I also know about the prioritizing of the prisons and this piece that they made with the businesses that people go there, they're going to make this stuff for free or 18 cents an hour. No money in there for them, but they're selling these products in the United States. And so it's like, we really need to look at it. And I hate to hear what happened to a young man in Chicago. I got a cousin right now from Chicago. They're charging him with so much. He's 21. They gave him 50-some years in prison. Called it sex trafficking loop. These women in their 40s and stuff. I don't know. You know, he's younger than these women. You understand what I'm saying? I don't get it. Was it really investigated? Was it really looked at in the way that it was? Or it's just another way to keep men and women down, because women are going in there pretty fast these days. But anyway, I really enjoyed hearing it, and I love that second chance. And I pray that you get that program off the ground to make that difference in our children's lives. Thank you.
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you for that, Lucille. I appreciate that. And Gary, I support you in that as well. I think all those ideas were great, and each and every one of them are needed.
Thank you, Ms. LaWanda.
I agree. I got one more question too, though. What do you think can, in our black community, what do you think we can do for resistance to make sure that we can stop this school-to-prison pipeline from happening in our community so rampant? You know, looking like, I think a lot of times those people that get caught into it and go back to the community, we try to assist, because we probably never had nobody to assist us when we was during them times. So, you know, I ask, you know, someone like you that's experienced and, you know, being older and going through this, though, you know, what can the community do better in general to make sure, though, that we can protect our black boys and black girls from being caught up into the system?
Right. Well, I'm going to tell you, the black community is really lacking with giving black boys skills, things that they can do with their hands, things that they can build, things that they can repair. So we have to get off into those things early as possible. You know, we're so caught up with, you know, thinking sports is the gift all. You know, I don't like sports. I don't like no sports. So every program can either revolve around sitting in a stand or playing, throwing a ball or whatever the case is. What about for us who don't do that? We like fixing things. We like making things work. What about for those boys? So, a lot of them have that missing father fractured in their lives. Having a mentor, somebody you can look up to, somebody who can steer you on the right path. A lot of them don't have that. So, they draw to all the negativity. So, having those things in the community beckons to change those things. You know, it gives one's ideas and something to look for, something to wake up for, because I got something to do. That's what I think about that.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that. That's a great answer. You know, I couldn't agree with you even more. And I work with kids, too, that, you know, like what you said, the poor, the low socioeconomic status, that, you know, we just don't have money. And sometimes that creates things around us as we're getting older that, you know, we're not aware, you know what I'm saying, of the bigger picture sometimes, because we're just surviving, you know, day to day. So I definitely understand what you're saying on that. Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that was a great answer as well. And I think it's a tangible idea, something that's definitely doable. And I think it's definitely something that needs to be addressed on the male, the men, the grown men. You know, putting some of that responsibility back on them to say, these young boys need you, so how do you plan to show up and help lift one of them up who may not have that father figure? You know, how do you help one that's already invested in the street and get them to turn their back on all the positives that they see as positive? They may not see the long-term cost. So how would I reach one that does not see value in building, you know, or see that as an opportunity?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that too, though. And I think even with Michelle saying about the 13th Amendment, I think it's a great documentary. I already seen it, and it's such a sad situation, because you look at how high these convictions are to black people, though, when we are considered a smaller percentage of everybody in the country. And I think the numbers are so striking, and just looking at the war on drugs and looking at things around. And that 13th Amendment, though, was that we're going to be slaves if we commit a crime. Boy, did they take that amendment and exploited us for it, you know? but I think the education piece is so important, though, for us to understand that if we don't understand what's going on in our history, we're going to repeat it, you know?
Absolutely. I saw that on Netflix as well. And the thing about it is, it's not just the 13th Amendment that don't apply to us. We have to realize none of it applies to us. And we have to get to a point to where we need them to renegotiate with us. Or you need to get the mindset of saying, I am African. I am not African, nor am I American. I am that ex-slave that Malcolm X was talking about. I'm the ex-slave, okay? Mm-hmm. Which you're trying to make me the modern-day slave, okay? And just basically say, okay, well, you know, if all of us got to the mindset of saying that I am neither African nor American, they forced to deal with you at a separate nation then. And then we talk about our own constitution and telling them, this is our constitution and this is our land.
Come on, tell it. Now y'all got me over here on my Marcus Garvey.
Because when you realize that don't apply to you, then you have an understanding as why they can shoot you on the street down like a dog. Or they can choke you out. Because that don't apply to you. When you're talking about we the people, not you. That don't apply to you. You can, we the people, in order to perform a more perfect union, it's not perfect. So now we have to make it more perfect by asking them to include a cut of the end.
Agreed.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's sad. And also,
go ahead, Josh.
No, and also, though, how does the pressure of privatized prisons? Because I hear that if the prison is not keeping inmates in, then it's a whole business operation that's going on, though. So it's like a two-ended question. How does that work with privatized prisons?
Privatized prisons have to get to the assumption of getting the move to actually directing that system towards these super predators. Now, there are super predators out there.
Right.
Okay. But the private prison have to get to the population where that prison structure is built for them, the worst of the worst. Okay?
Wow.
So then you get to the system where if I can either rehabilitate you and get your mindset on thriving out here, or you continue down that path in that caste system of the prison structure. He can't function in society. And we have those people too. But the thing about it is, we're all painted with that broad brush. And they're looking at us all like that. Rather than our individuality. So
let them tell you ain't an individual.
Right. Well, that's correct. You're 3/5 of a human being still. Written in their constitution, what they consider you as, Dred Scott law. So we have to get to the table and renegotiate how you're going to treat us. You know, I just thought that if you know you can't treat us right and we're not considered Americans, you know we need our own nation. We need to create our own and take him up against the UN court and charge him with genocide, racism, modern-day slavery,
what it is.
Jim Crow.
And we probably started, though, and we had reparations, but that's a whole other topic, though, because we should be getting that just so slavery never ended. You know what I'm saying? It just changed platforms.
And that's exactly what it did. It changed platform to the prison. And their primary goal is to put an X on every black man and boy's back, to kick him out of the system, saturate your infrastructure with black women and others, but you're eliminating the black male to a slave platform.
Well,
work for minimum wage, multi-minimum wage.
but he won't thrive. Which makes him
and
almost...
What I want to say to this, Gary, what
yes,
I want
ma'am.
To say to this is this. We know that they have a play on words, right? And they've done this several times with this situation as you're explaining. Okay. They're not going to call slavery slavery anymore because we know that that's the word. So welcome yourself to the idea of capitalism. That is still slavery. Okay, we're still living in different, like you said, Josh, different slave platforms here. So if we were to separate and get our own constitution, what is the first step to organizing and taking action? You know, we need to take action because we know this is a...
We definitely need to talk about separation and denouncing citizenship and creating our own constitution within this country.
Amen.
Come on. Give us the roadmap. You know.
Because he don't deal with us what right. Your constitution don't apply. And giving them chance after chance, it don't work. But we here. Okay? And that which you said we were from, we never been. But we still here. We call ourselves Americans. I don't feel American. I used to feel American before I was victimized. And I bring it to your attention, you make it so difficult to come from under it. But every time you see the system mess up, they want some type of forgiveness. They want you to forget about it. They want you to give them a new start. They want to integrate with your neighborhoods and give you some type of idea that we can be friends now. But you still can't find a job.
Keep your friends closer and your enemies closer. Come on, they playing chess. We playing checkers. Wake
they
want to
come in your. They want to come in your neighborhoods and feed you all types of plates. Knock on your door, neighbor. Have you seen anything? Can we help you with anything? But you still can't find a job.
And that just brings you right back to doing the same thing that probably got you back in that situation, you know?
Well, the thing about it is, when we realize that the game they playing on it, you know, if in the event that you are caught up, they shouldn't catch you twice on the same thing, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you, if in fact that you were wrongfully convicted, you shouldn't have been convicted twice on something different. You know, you're not the super predator that they're saying that you are. So these type of things don't happen to regular people. But they're not interested in you because you're just a number.
Mm-hmm.
Kim Fox don't know me. She don't know me from Jesse Smollett. She never heard of me. She have no reason to help me. But when you hear the story, you have an obligation to look into it.
Exactly.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's a situation that, I mean, I'm so glad that you were able to talk about everything that's going on, because I think we need to have that conversation, though, no matter how uncomfortable it is, though, because it happens all the time. The topic should be way discussed, especially with the whole politics going on, because you love, like what LaWanda was saying, we got to find solutions, you know, and I believe we're going to politics and prison reform, but we got to figure out, you know, other ways to, you know, kind of resist ourselves from it, because it's an issue that's happening, and the more we talk about it, I think it could bring more exposure to inmates, and we need to start looking at inmates like they're human, like they're animals, you know what I'm saying? People make mistakes, you know what I'm saying? And yes, you do got people, though, that are super predators, like what Mr. Chambers was saying, though, but you also got some in there that never had no guidance, that never had nobody to tell them right from wrong, and they just got caught up, you know what I'm saying? And now them getting out, it's adding more barriers to it. So it's like, I would love, you know, for us to go in the future, though, we have more advocates like yourself, myself now, and people just be aware about it in the community so that we can educate ourselves more about it.
Exactly.
Well, that makes total sense.
I guess for me, just having this discussion just sheds light on the work that we're doing in the community now and how, you know, you are trying to help people see their potential, but if there are no resources, it's really challenging to see such a change that's needed, because poverty is an issue of mental health in itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so barriers in these environments and the systemic issues in the family, you know, contributes to these kinds of situations too, where kids are just looking for something to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so really, and that's why I think that mentorship is a key piece to addressing some of these issues and giving kids something to do. And so I like everything that we have discussed this evening. And Gary, I just thank you for coming on Black Sister Talk, where you can breathe and share the story.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I feel better. I just let some of that trauma out to tell the people, because for many years I wasn't able to talk about it, and you know, keeping it to myself so I can work. Okay, not telling the world this is what happened to me. So now I'm able to talk about it because I want it repaired. I want to be repaired.
Mm-hmm.
And I do open the door. You know, I'm not looking for no mass apology. You don't have to give me that. Give me my just due and make me whole.
Come on,
so I can go on to the next level. That's all I want.
It's just freedom, you know, freedom. Freedom. That's what that truly is. We have 2 minutes left, and so I want to close with some words from Brother Marcus Garvey. Okay, we are going to emancipate ourselves from mental slavery, because whilst others might free the body, none but ourselves can free the mind. Mind is your only ruler, sovereign. The man who is not able to develop or use his mind is bound to be the slave of the other man who uses his mind. Use your intelligence to work out the real things of life. The time you waste in levity and non-essentials, if you use it properly, you will be able to guarantee your posterity a condition better than your inheritance from your forefathers. And so, listening to your story, Gary, that's the word that came to me from Brother Marcus Garvey. I wanted to share that because that's everything we've been expressing this evening. And so I think you are very progressive in your thoughts. I hope continued success with you and your endeavor. And I'm praying on September 9th for attorney season, which is over. This is a no-brainer for them to go ahead and
Just getting out of prison, how does it feel to be part of the system? I appreciate it. Thank you, Gary. Thank you to all the stress, the stress, the awareness, the things that we got to talk about. You got to talk about it. You know, trauma is real. We got to start talking about it.
Got to stand up. Somebody always got to take the L, you know. It's time to level up, stand up, and be the person I do, set example for the young brothers coming up at you.
But what are you going to do now that you're free?
I'm going to be up.
Started off poor with plans to own more. Now we own stores and fuck the baddest horse. I was on tour with niggas that's so raw. Started selling white, we won't sell it no more. Like Trump ain't feeling us. Cops still killing us. Niggas taking shots, can't stop me. They ain't real enough. Cut her off, act like she did, and it's killing us. New dawn, earn my seats. I left the ceiling up just to kill him softly. Ooh, get him on me. Try to crucify me like I'm Jesus. The way she crossed me.
too bossy and too thorough. The mood like a weirdo, on point like an arrow. We started out with zero, now I'm seeing M's. Diamonds like water and they jumping out the gym. Shooting like Harden if your head was the rim. Cause niggas wanna line me like a shape up in a trim down. Back when I was broke, they was cool with it. Now every move I make, I'm in the news with it. Even if I ain't do it, they be like, you did it. My teacher always used to tell me, you gon' lose, nigga. That's why I never went to school, nigga. And why I'm rapping like I got something to prove, nigga. Went and bought the mansion with the pool in it. Billy with the stab, I get a two with it. Move with it, cause these niggas wanna take my life. No weapon form against me every time I pray at night. Scuba daddies in the phantom, that's the way of life. And make them fuck they best friends like that was dice. Reaching for the Glock every time I play the light. I'm on 12 o'clock every time I play them bikes. I'm with the pack, getting back, yeah. Spitting dope, nigga, selling smack, gang. I'm getting chips off music like rap snacks, yeah. 10 million cash off F's.